Okay, hey guys, and welcome to the Three Drinks In podcast, episode number 170. I am your host, Vince, and over there is your host, Phil.
Yo.
There's Phil. In this episode, we are talking about the DC animated movie Superman Red Son. Before we start that, though, I want to remind you that Three Drinks In is available on all streaming services, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. Make sure that you subscribe, tell all your friends, and leave us a review. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at @ThreeDrinksInPod. You can like us on Facebook, and you can email us at threedrinksinpodcast@gmail.com. So, yes. So, yeah, this came out very recently.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was they made it last year, and they I don't even know how I heard about this, but I think I texted you and like we should do this, and then there's this one, and I just don't even know where it came. But it, so this concept always sort of crossed, like it just seemed interesting to me. So I've kind of gravitated to the concept of like what if Superman were, you know, born or rather landed in, you know, the Soviet Union and not in in Kansas. And so like when I saw the something on the internet about like they made a movie about it, I'm like, oh well, great, because that's, you know, I don't know, it's just always kind of caught my eye as being a interesting idea.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah, they in like the early 2000s and the teens, I guess, they did a lot of those what if comics, which is when we were like, we've run out of stories to tell, so let's do something wacky. And they like, you know, what if Batman was in Victorian London and he had to like catch Jack the Ripper and that kind of stuff. And they made a lot of them, mostly with Batman.
So Mark Miller wrote this one, and like this is where I always feel like I'm like a phony, like my nerd cred isn't quite like strong enough, because like I don't know anything about this guy. But like I look at all of his credits now, I go, oh, okay, so The Kingsman, Old Man Logan, Civil War, like, you know, he's this guy's no joke when it comes to writing comic books. So he's, you know.
Yeah, I mean, but like a lot of the more famous ones that he's done come much later. I mean, people don't really read comic books as often as they used to, if at all. I mean, it's really a niche thing. People just sort of watch the TV shows and the movies. I mean, I stopped reading comics in the 90s. So that's, it's not a, not that, you know, it's all tied to me. I'm just saying, like.
Well, I stopped doing it, so therefore.
Like, I'm extremely average at reading those things. So if I'm not doing it, you know, only the diehards are really stuck. Well, I guess it is about me. Well, okay. But. Yeah, so this is one of the more popular variants of like what would happen if Superman landed somewhere else except Kansas. So,
yeah, and it's fun, I think, in a way. It's kind of like what's his name, like Philip K. Dick, and all like the revisionist history, and like what if you know, what if the South won the Civil War? What if the Nazis, you know, won World War II? There was some movie, I can't, it didn't really go anywhere. It was, I think it was an independent film, but it was, it kind of had like a modern day spin on like what would happen, what would have happened if the South had won the Civil War. And I can't remember everything about the trailer, but basically the trailer was like a fake ad for a product in the, you know, that was being sold to people in the Confederate States of America, and like the last shot of the ad was like the family of like the mom and the dad and the, you know, and then their slave, and you know, all like, you know, kind of Uncle Tom there pruning the hedges, like, you know, and everyone's dressed in modern day outfits and everything, but that the whole thing was, and they never really work very well. And I like, in terms of like, you know, the actual historical events being like, the closest thing to it is like The Man in the High Castle, which was not a great TV show, and it's supposedly not a very good book either, and people say like this is actually the worst of his books that they did, but it's sort of the most filmable of the books. It's very visually appealing. And although I didn't like the show because it was boring and long and didn't actually get anywhere, the world building was really great. They didn't like explain a whole lot too. So like the Nazis control the eastern half of the U.S. and the Japanese the western half, with like a no man's land in the middle. And they don't. They were good that they didn't like spoon feed you everything. Like they were not in Washington D.C. Why not? Because it didn't exist anymore. Because the whole thing was that the Germans developed the atomic bomb first and they used it first, and then that's how they won. But most other times when this sort of revisionist history is done, and they either lean into it wholeheartedly, like what's his face, Pulp Fiction, can't think of his name, Quentin Tarantino does with all of his movies, where they rewrite the past, or it's just not that good because you never really know what's going to happen, and nothing ever seems to really make sense. Like,
yeah. So the best, they consider them alternate history. The best books I know are by Harry Turtledove. He's on a ton of them. And they're usually good. They're more exciting than the Philip K. Dick because he's more modern. You know, he's just on so many. And those are good because he actually spends time explaining why it would have happened. You know, like, if you're going to tell me that the South wins the Civil War, you better have a damn good reason for that, because there was no way they were going to win that war. So,
yeah,
you know, like you have to take us through the steps. And then it has to branch out naturally from there. So like when you get, like, think of like Watchmen, where like all of a sudden Richard Nixon is president, and then he's president for like five terms or something. Like, well, they changed the laws after FDR. He wouldn't have had that many terms. So like when the timeline splits, it should be when, like, it's nerdy things to complain about, but this is what your thing is. You're a nerdy. This is a nerdy story, so you better get your facts straight, you know?
Yeah.
So those are really good. The comics tend to take like a more like just like a what if, or, you know, like, it's not just that Superman lands in the Soviet Union, but he does so at like at a different time. Like, that's 1930, 1940. Like, it's not a modern day Superman who just happens to land in Russia or something.
That's true. Yeah. So, yeah, give our listeners, all four of you, the backdrop. Yeah. So he lands in Russia. I guess earlier than, well, hang on a minute. Like, in the comics, they were written in the 30s, right? The original, you know, Joel and the, what's his face, the guys, that was
yeah,
the 30s.
That's the 30s. Yeah.
Yeah. So
this wasn't written until recently.
Yeah. No, this is like 2003. So he kind of lands. So Stalin is still in charge, and Stalin dies in 1950. And so it's sort of along the same lines. You know, it's like pre-World War II. So it's probably, you know, I guess it's the same basic time. So the location is only is the main difference in this case. And so he, you don't see much about his parents, but you do see some people who are around him in his youth. And that kind of just fast forwards very much to the 1950s, and that's when things kind of take off. And so everyone's in a different role. Batman is a kid he used to know when he was little, who's been in a gulag for the last few years. Lois Lane is married to Lex Luthor, who's not as big of a dick in this version than he used to be.
Right.
Jimmy Olsen is like a government agent turned the vice president when Luthor gets elected president.
I'm sure, trying, why not?
Trying to think who else was.
Jimmy Olsen's always the most elastic.
It's true. He can really be anything. He's black too.
He's black. Sure, hey, he can be anything.
I'm trying to think who else made. So like the Green Lantern guys make it.
He's married to Lois Lane.
Right.
Lex Luthor. Luthor is. There's the Green Lantern guys. Lana Lang is his friend.
Oh, right. Yes. Russia. Svetlana.
Svetlana.
Is which I thought was kind of clever.
Yeah.
But
Wonder Woman's in it. She's about the same.
Yeah, and like full on lesbian, but pretty much the same.
A little more gay.
A little less ambiguous about that now. So what did you think of this movie? Because you've got more of a history of engagement with some of the animated stuff that Warner Brothers has put out over the last 20 years.
Yeah. I thought it was okay, except I think the last third of it was kind of a bummer. But it started out interesting, you know. He grows up in Russia. His friend convinces him to go out and help people, which is fine. But then he becomes like this, tool of the state, where he's doing everything Stalin tells him to do. He has no identity of his own beyond Superman, which I thought was interesting.
He's
Clark Kent.
Yeah, he didn't have a name.
Yeah.
You know, she even says, and this is, you know, one of the things I always tend to find things about the Soviet Union interesting. But she says to him, like, you have to give yourself to the state. That's the exact words that she tells him. Which I don't know. I always thought that was interesting. Was that the way that that she phrased that?
Yeah, which I could see. That makes sense. I mean, that was what little kids were brainwashed into saying. Mm-hmm. So, so that was interesting. And the idea that because he's on that side, you know, it's America that has trouble keeping up with them. You know, like, how do we, if we're having an arms race, we're no longer building nuclear weapons, how do we keep up with this Ubermensch, you know, when they turn to Lex Luthor? And it was interesting, like, that race after a while, because, you know, he kills Stalin and takes over the country. But after a while, like, after the whole Brainiac thing, I was like, what is this going? What is the point of this?
Yeah. I found it pretty dull at times. And, like, I wasn't sure, like, am I just not engaged with this because this is a cartoon and I'm not used to watching?
Don't make that mistake.
Yeah, yeah. And, I mean, there's something about the medium that's sort of hard for me to kind of sink my teeth into in general. But, I mean, this is not a cartoon for children by any means. This is a...
So the thing with these cartoons is that in the 90s and the early 2000s, they were making the Justice League and the Batman animated series, all that stuff everybody knows, really famous. And then they shut it down and they just said, like, we ran out of stories. It's expensive to produce these things. Nobody's watching television at 9 a.m. anymore on a Saturday. And so they kind of shut it down. They started making the movies. The movies, the live action stuff started becoming more popular. Well, after, well, I don't know, 2010, they started making the cartoons again just as movies. So there's a lot of them. Like, how do we adapt the comic book stories and make them into movies? So, you know, the Red Hood and Red Sun, you know, all these different stories, stuff with Harley Quinn, the Suicide Squad. Let's just make them movies. We'll crank them out on DVD and people will buy them. And some of them are good and some of them are not. But they had the opportunity to, like, be more adult. So there's always blood. Sometimes they talk about sex, you know, people get blown up. They curse a lot, you know, because they were like, well, we have this freedom. The only one who's really buying these things are nerds. So, yeah, you know, everybody else is watching Iron Man. So who cares? Like, let's just do our own thing.
Yeah.
You know, but this is, it's not the most exciting story because it's all about the inner, you know, the inner struggles of Russian Superman and what he's doing. So some of that is dull.
Yeah, and, like, it's sort of, like, I was sort of surprised that he's the main character because he really can't be the main character here. Like, the whole thing about Superman in the traditional story is that he has to, you know, like, the character is extraordinarily thin. And, you know, he does all of his growing up kind of off screen. Like, in the 76 Donner movie and in all the comic books, he's conflicted about developing into this super person as a teenager. And then after his father dies, he goes and wanders the world and ends up in the Arctic, where he builds his Fortress of Solitude. And then you don't see him go through the development process of becoming the Superman. He just, you know, like in the movie, he literally, like, it's a scene change, and then he's 20 years older and he's standing there in the suit and he flies away. And you can find little hooks to, or toeholds to sort of grab onto in that story, just to see him struggle with developing these things. And they tried to do that with the Zack Snyder Man of Steel. It didn't really go all that great. But there's something there to watch someone develop and, you know, look at their powers, you know, the variety of ways you could use them. Here, you know, they tell him right off the bat, like, the Soviets are bad. Like, within the first 20 minutes of this little movie, Lois Lane hands him a file saying, we have a, you know, reports that all your friends are in a gulag buried underground in Siberia. And he's like, that's propaganda. And he flies over there and he's like, oh, look, it's true. And that's when he decides to kill Stalin and take over the country and sort of do things differently. And, you know, the dialogue is weird and stilted and it's kind of like, you know, the kind of weird rationalization that Stalin has to give him in that little scene before he gets, you know, melted. But that happens so early on in the story that I'm kind of going, well, where are they going to go from here? Like, what kind of a leader is he going to be? Because, like, right away, the guys who break down the door to find the melted Stalin in the puddle on the floor just kneel before Superman. Like, well, we can't kill this guy, so, you know, you're the leader, I guess. And it's about him sort of like developing different ways of, you know, accomplishing Stalin's and socialism's goals without the gulags. And it ends up being more about technology, and then Brainiac shows up. And the Brainiac thing was interesting, but it was like in the montage.
Yeah, when it first started, it was in the montage, and I was just like, "Oh, we're doing this now." Because I mean, I know enough about Brainiac to understand what's going on, and it's so out of place compared to all the real politic. I'm like, "Oh, a giant computer space alien is here to suck up cities and put them in glass bottles." Sure.
Yeah, and yeah, it ends up being a central part of the film, but it. The character's introduction was like a Brainiac's rather was such a kind of not throwaway, but oh, by the way, and he also saved us from Brainiac, and Stalingrad is now in the little jar, and like it's just oh, it's like in when you were talking to me months ago about the second season of Discovery, and he's like, you know, you know how they found that cube or that thing flying in space. And it kind of seemed like a one-off. I was like, yeah. He's like, and you're like, ends up being extremely important.
Yeah, turns out the crux of the entire story relied on that. So
yeah. Kind of felt that way here. Like, Brainiac's what eventually turns Superman into a good person is the fact that he sacrifices himself by flying Brainiac into oblivion or whatever. Right.
Yeah, he sends it into space before his ship explodes.
Right, and he's powered by like six black holes or whatever. So like there was no way to survive the explosion of it or whatever it was. Although I have to say that like the final fight between Brainiac and Superman is like, you know, they set him up as being like so much more powerful than Superman for about a minute.
Well, yeah, he's Superman.
Yeah, and just if I just really want to punch him hard, then it'll be. You know, useful. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so like his story arc begins really early, and that's sort of unfortunate. Like the story of the, you know, communist Superman really isn't about communist Superman, because communists don't have stories. They just have suffering and toil until they either die or they have an epiphany and they change their tune. So the story should really be about the other people and how do you deal with Superman. And I always think about that episode of the Justice League. I can't remember. I saw it a long time ago, but like was it Batman comes up with like a contingency plan for what, like the, or was it the lady, the black lady from the government?
Yeah, the black lady.
Yeah, so explain that one to me again.
Well, in the comics, it's Batman, and in the Justice League cartoon, it's Amanda Waller. You know, what will we have to do if the Justice League decides they're going to take over the planet? And they come up with all these contingencies. And in the comic, or in the Justice League cartoon, Batman always carries kryptonite on him. And it like comes up every so often. They're like, you still have that? He's like, yeah, it's in my belt right now. And he's like, you know, just in case. And in the comic, there's a big storyline where he has a contingency for everybody. And like the villains get a hold of the plans and use them. And they like, you know, they win at the end, but they're all kind of like mad at Batman for even coming up with that stuff. And he was like, well, you know, if you ever did that, it'd be bad news. You know, so.
So that's really, I think, what would have been the more interesting storyline to explore here. And like, I get that sort of betrays a little bit of what you wanted to do, was talk about how the Soviet Union would have developed differently if they had had Superman. But that's where you get into this weird, you know, awkward alternate history type of storyline that never really pans out all that great. Like, why would Superman have enriched the Soviet Union all that much? Like, how would that have, you know, there's too complex there as an adult watching this to go, oh, okay, so they have him and he makes everything better for some reason.
Yeah, they didn't do a good enough job. And like, I mean, they tell you and they hint at it that like the people that don't agree with Superman, he like re-educates them by like, you know, turning them into like lobotomized people, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm sure in the comic they do more with that, where it's like, this small group of people, at least I gave them jobs, but now they're, you know, they're not violent anymore and they just do what I say. And then it snowballs from there until someone turns it around on him and says, like, you're doing the exact same thing as Stalin. You know?
Oh, Phil, you cut out there for a second. You still there?
Hey.
Hey. Let me write that down just so I know when to edit that.
Yeah. What was I saying?
You said you're doing the same thing as Stalin.
Yeah, you're doing the same thing as Stalin. You need someone to turn that around on him and show that to him, which is what happens at the very end. You know, yeah. Brainiac and Lois Lane are like, you know, you've achieved all the great stuff, but is it really great? Like, you're right. It's not just about Superman. It's about Luthor trying to beat Superman, and it becomes like a personal thing. You know, great expense, scientific, experiments and money and time and effort trying to beat Soviet Superman. That also helps bring the American economy down. You know, that one, it doesn't happen as much in this. He's always like so nonchalant about it.
Yeah. Luthor's story really is the more interesting one here, just because like it's sort of hard to get your head around what's so great about communism, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, this is not like a sympathetic to communism kind of story, but at the same time, they spend a lot of time trying to talk you into, like, Superman's trying to talk his way into everything. Like, it was kind of interesting how he didn't just take over the planet, that he essentially had the same idea as a lot of American leaders did about the Soviet Union, which was just like, well, it depended. Some people thought like we just had to live with the Soviets. They were always going to be there. They were a strong nation, blah, blah, blah. And then certain people, chiefly Ronald Reagan, was like, there's no way that this can sustain itself. They can't do it. It's not going to work. Their economy will eventually fall apart. It's just how this happens. And he was absolutely right about that, because the economy just collapsed under its own weight. They didn't know what the hell they were doing. And that's basically what Superman says here, which is like, I thought if we gave it enough time, our superior technology would make it clear to everybody that, like, we're the best. And, you know, who's got two thumbs and loves communism? This guy. And then that would permeate throughout the world, and, you know, we would eventually win. And that's kind of interesting in the sense that, like, you'd figure Superman would just fly across the planet Earth and blow up the White House and kill the president and just kind of plant a flag and say, you are mine now. But he doesn't do that, which might be kind of more interesting from a character point of view, but not from a cinematic point of view.
Right.
You know,
I think it's the only way to go in terms of character, because he says it to Brainiac, like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to kill people I don't have to kill. And you're seeing at that point where he's like, he's still sort of deluding himself because he's been killing people by lobotomizing them and other things, you know, but also the movie would be over in 5 seconds.
Yeah. So this is where you like, if you make Superman a bad guy, there's no way to recover from that. The only way to do that is to combine the idea of making him a bad guy who's politically inclined to, you know, to wait this thing out. And at the same time, you show Luther more earnestly and less sort of chauvinistically trying to figure out how to kill Superman.
And I don't think, like, in the movie, he's much more aligned with the U.S. government. So, like, every time there was, like, an action scene that they had to shoehorn in, like with the Green Lanterns especially, it's like, that's an act of war, isn't it? For a movie that's dealing a lot with politics. But in the comics, it's not. It's just like, ugh, this guy Luther again. Whereas in this one, it's like, why is he not responding to that? I mean, he just sort of beats them up and then that's it. I'm like, oh, I thought he was going to do something there.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, no, it's not bad. It's certainly kind of clever and, you know, kind of interesting. What do you think of Batman in this?
I thought he was okay. I mean, that could have been a whole movie, I guess, just the two of them.
Yeah, it just sort of seemed like shoved in there.
I mean, I think the point of that was that where it works well is that with the whole Wonder Woman thing. You know, like, mm-hmm. Wonder Woman is his only friend that he, like, sort of respects because she's so powerful.
Right.
And then the Batman thing shows that she's not as important to him as she thought.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so that was like a nice little moment where she kind of says, like, well, the hell with you, pal. You know?
Yeah.
But she got another moment later with the Green Lanterns.
Yeah, she just kind of shows back up again and she looks different. But
she says that it's the same scene where she's like, well, no, I'm never coming back. I'm like, but you already said that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but, you know, typical Batman style, he's the coolest one in the movie, doing all the cool stuff.
Yeah, he implants a bomb in his own chest kind of thing. Like, yeah, that was...
And he has followers, too. Like, in the comic, the followers continue the mission.
Yeah, he's really more of an anarchist than anything else.
Right.
So...
Yeah, I thought he looked good. I mean, the hat was a bit much. Yeah, no.
It's very cold there.
It's very cold in Russia. What do you think of all the accents?
Oh, my God. Yeah, Bon James. All I can think of is Robbie Coltrane doing, like, the worst Russian accent in history. Jason Isaacs played Superman. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah.
You know, is he Scottish or is he like Northern English?
I think he's Northern English or something like that. Yeah, he's not Scottish.
Yeah, like, it's one of the things I loved about that movie, The Death of Stalin, was him as, you know, General Zhukov or whoever. And, like, I think what helped that movie's humor, because it was also so incredibly dark, was that everyone's wasn't putting on a Russian accent. And in some cases, they were told, like, take your normal voice and just do that more. So Steve Buscemi was just, you know, like annoying guy from wherever. And Jason Isaacs had this incredibly thick English accent, which didn't gel with what they were doing. But at the same time, like, it was good. It was kind of give you like a break from what you were like the horror you were actually witnessing.
Yeah.
But I thought his accent, I thought he was one of those things where, like, I'm looking at the rest of the cast here, and they're all, with the exception of Jason Isaacs and Amy Acker, who played Lois Lane, they're all kind of wasted. Like, well, they're kind of wasted as, like, you know, voice actors, because they're not really voice actors. They're just actors. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but maybe they do more voice work than I realize. But the rest of them, like Phil Morris and Paul Williams and Phil Lamar, like, all these guys are, like, really known, really well-established voice actors. And you kind of figure, like, you know, I thought John DiMaggio was going to show up here too. Like, there's just everyone is in this movie, and then you have Jason Isaacs doing this. I don't know. It felt silly to me. Something about it didn't seem all that serious. And I think this movie needed more seriousness in some ways. And they all sounded kind of goofy.
Yeah, like Phil Morris is in almost all of these things. He's been doing John Stewart, the Green Lantern, since the Justice League, since like 2000, you know. So, and he's Aquaman in those Injustice video games. He's been in a million of them, you know. But yeah, but Jason Isaacs was an odd choice. I also thought Diedrich Bader was an odd choice because he was clearly imitating other people.
He's the guy from like Third Rock from the Sun. Is that that was French Stewart.
Yeah, it's French Stewart. He was the neighbor in Office Space with the mustache.
Oh, he was in the Drew Carey show too.
Yeah, Drew Carey guy. Yeah. So like he was doing this like super serious rich guy voice, and it sounded like a guy doing a voice, you know.
Yeah.
So he was a little off to me. I don't know. I think the only one who actually was from Eastern European descent was his friend Lana.
Yes, I read that in the IMDb.
Yeah.
Things.
You know, so they're all doing like moose and it's so close to moose and squirrel accent, you know.
Dr. Jones. You will help us capture moose and squirrel. It's just like in like the top five funniest things you've ever said out loud. The movie was so terrible.
Yes. Dr. Jones, you will help us catch a moose and squirrel. It's just like, wait, what?
Is that the lady from The Lord of the Rings?
Yeah. I mean, she couldn't do the accent either. She's an Oscar nominee or whatever.
No, the Russian accent is really hard to do, I think, because it's so easy to do badly.
Yeah, it sounds like a parody of itself.
I mean,
Russia's huge. I mean, the variations in accents must be extreme too. You know, like a Moscow versus Berlin is, or even closer to China. Did you ever see that movie Enemy at the Gates?
Sure.
I saw that in theaters years ago, and I was stunned to see all these Asian actors in it. And I was like, why are there so many Asian people at the Battle of Stalingrad? And they were saying, Russia goes into Asia like crazy. Like, it's just a huge country. But yeah. There are tons of people of Asian descent there.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, they captured a lot of them and dragooned them into service for years.
Right. So, I mean, the variations on accents must be crazy.
One of the things
it just sounds like a Bullwinkle cartoon.
Yeah, well, it's always that or a James Bond movie. Like one of the things I always liked about that show, The Americans, was that all the Russian actors or the Russian characters were played by Russian actors. Mm-hmm. And that's not easy to do. Like, I just watched this movie or this TV show, Unorthodox, about a woman that leaves a Orthodox Jewish community in Brooklyn. And, you know, you have to look for them, but like you have to look for, you know, people who can play these parts. Usually that means you got to find a bunch of Jews, guys from Israel who are, you know, who can speak Yiddish and can like be convincing in these roles, both accent wise and, you know, they have to physically look. I mean, Jewish people have a particular look. They, you know, they like any sort of culture and, you know, small subgroup of people that tend to, you know, marry within their own already very small group, you know, they have a look. Russians, you know, there's not a lot of Russians hanging out there looking for work in Hollywood, but the 18 that there are all got hired to be on The Americans for 6 years. It was great. And they were all good too. They weren't bad. But yeah, no, I thought the voices were kind of all over the place. Mm-hmm. And I kind of missed the, like, Kevin Conroy's voice. People, like, they talk about how iconic it is as Batman, and but, like, it's not just about the fact that he had that great sort of, like, low baritone timbre for it, but it was just about the control of which all the people on that show had of their voices, including, Luke Skywalker.
You know, Mark Hamill was great.
I mean, like, you have to have a lot of control and, you know, structure to what you're doing in order to play these parts well. And the people most of the actors in this movie had that. It was fine. But asking them to do with Russian accents and, you know, having people, you know, like the Dietrich, whatever his name is, can't even say it.
Bader.
Yeah, Dietrich, rather.
Yeah, Dietrich.
You know, they're sort of all over the place, and it doesn't really make a lot of sense. But then again, I think that was sort of one of the problems with the Lex Luthor character was that it was sort of underwritten.
Yeah, he was. Because he's the only one providing any action.
Yeah.
You know, like, otherwise Superman would be on his side of the country and everybody else in America would be on their side and they wouldn't, you know, interact at all. You know. And then when it came to, like, doing things, there was no explanation. It's just, I'm going to clone Superman and make Superior Man. And then we found a Green Lantern. Now I'm going to make a bunch of Green Lanterns. It's like, those are the best plans you can come up with. I don't understand this.
You know? Yeah. They all look kind of like, they were sort of takes on, you know, like one of them is a take on Superman 4 and also Bizarro Superman in a way.
Yeah.
And the Green Lantern thing I actually thought was kind of interesting, but it didn't go anywhere. Like, if that had been the one thing that they did, that would have been kind of interesting. Like, if they found whatever the name of the alien that Hal Jordan finds, instead of Hal Jordan finding him, they do, and then they cut off his finger and take the ring. And, you know, it says it'll take us years to re-engineer this, or, you know, reverse engineer this thing. And then it doesn't come up in the story for like a little while. So in the course of the epic tale that this was, you find out that they had been working on it and they figured out a way to make a bunch of them. But it didn't matter.
Yeah, that scene ended up becoming a scene with him and Wonder Woman.
Right.
But she already had that scene with her and Batman. So it was like, this is just a repeat and another excuse to have an action scene, unfortunately.
Yeah. So really the ultimate problem, I think, with the story is that it wasn't about one thing. It needed to be about one thing. And I think they tried to do the comic book justice, which I'm not having read it. I presume it takes place over a long period of time like this. But it's, you know, it can't be a story about Superman. It's got to be a story about how we stop Superman. And they didn't do that. And they threw that bit in there as you watch Superman sort of try to hang on to the glories of the Soviet Empire. But, you know, that's a losing battle no matter what, unless you're going to have him win and take over the world, which they're not going to do. So they would have been better off, I think, just to, you know, make Lex Luthor more likable, which would have been in keeping with the whole, it's opposite day.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, give him one project that's like, okay, Lex, it's up to you. We got this is our last hope. Europe is gone. Like, you can really kind of up the stakes and say, like, you know, the the Eastern Bloc wasn't enough for Superman. He's now taken over all of Europe and parts of Africa, and you know there's Red China and you know everything else. And so like, if you kind of show the walls closing in on America and how desperate they are, and yet they have this genius in Lex Luthor, you know, what's the one thing he's going to come up with to beat Superman? And they didn't do that. It ended up being kind of a mishmash of like, what would have happened in reality is things fall apart because socialism does not hold up over long periods of time, especially if you're enslaving half the people in your country. And then they just kind of go, oh, and Brainiac's going to be here to kind of make things really awkward before we have to throw him into the sun or whatever. Because not quite sure what happened there. So they didn't have a coherent single story that you could follow. It was much more epic and went on over a lot more time.
Yeah. And what's great about that, like in the comic book, after Superman sacrifices himself, he destroys Brainiac. Everyone thinks he's gone. Lex Luthor is still the president. They usher in like, you know, new world peace, you know? So without Superman, the countries of the world unite, the science is, you know, takes 1,000 steps forward. Lex Luthor lives to be like 1,000 years old or something like that. You know, the medical science is amazing. And then they augment their own abilities. And the epilogue is, you know, millions of years in the future when the Earth is being torn apart by the sun that's about to go whatever, which is now red. The descendant of Lex Luthor sends his son back in time, and that's Superman. And so Superman is like a distant, distant, distant descendant of Lex Luthor and Lois Lane. And nobody ever knows that but us, the reader. Which, you know, okay, cute.
Yeah, cute. That's all right. Kind of a stretch.
Yeah, like it wasn't in here, and I was fine with that. Because like that would have come out of nowhere, but... That's very much a comic booky kind of thing.
Yeah, we'll throw in this thing at the last minute just to, you know.
Well, I mean,
see if you're paying attention.
I mean, their animosity was stronger in the comic too. You know, like they hated each other. They really were constantly, like Lex Luthor was constantly trying to figure out, how do I stop this person and make my country superior? And the entire time he's doing it, it doesn't work. It's making his country worse. You know, that doesn't really happen in the movie.
Well, it can't. I mean, like these kind of movies, they can't take place over long periods of time. You know, when does the film end? Then, like the '80s or the '90s?
Yeah, I think the '80s.
Yeah, so you know, you got a 40-year story to tell. It's not going to be. You know, you have to do a lot of that in montage, and the more montages you have in a movie, and there were several in this one. You know, the weaker the story seems, because you're just. You seem like you're barreling through interesting stuff just to get to the points where you sit around and talk.
Yeah.
So.
And there's always the expectation, because it's a Superman cartoon, that there should be some punching. So, you know, but they should make a Superman movie that doesn't have a lot of action in it. You could do something with that.
I always kind of thought that the concepts explored in Man of Steel, you know, looking at it from the human's perspective, which you really don't do, was kind of interesting. I just felt that they sort of went overboard with it in Man of Steel. Like they had characters make decisions that were so, you know, anachronistic to what we had come to expect. So like Jonathan Kent would always tell, you know, Clark that, well, you know, you're going to do great things one day, and you're going to be amazing one day. And then Kevin Costner is telling him that, let people die, it's fine, you need to protect yourself. And like, people were really bothered by that, and I wasn't really bothered by it, because
no, you and I had huge fights about it.
Yeah, because I felt like, well, as a parent, that's a natural instinct. If you have a, you know, a child with a gift that you know is going to be exploited, then you want to protect them from the exploiters as much as possible. It's a realistic way to look at what would actually happen. but you can kind of go so far with that, you know. What was funny was that, like, it went from, you know, being a hyper realistic, you know, movie about, you know, what if this was a real thing, which is the theme of every superhero movie these days. But then it quickly sort of devolved into, you know, destroying entire buildings and traveling from Kansas to here and blowing that up. I'm like, oh, okay.
Yeah. The problem with that, I mean, there was 1,000 problems with that. Man of Steel. I mean, first of all, that wasn't earned, that that they would have that doubt. You know, so I always go to that cartoon, but in that cartoon, they did 2 seasons of Superman, and the last episode of that last season, Superman gets brainwashed by Darkseid, and he, you know, wrecks the planet and hurts people and stuff. So when they do that Justice League, it's all set up as to, like, it's happened before. It's not like a bizarre, you know, paranoid feeling. You know, we've experienced it now. What do we do? And they were good in that, like, if you're going to explore those kinds of questions, then people have to stay true to who they are and what they are. You know, like, it's called consistency. And it's really important. So Superman never wavers from, like, who he really is in that show. You know, he's like, I'm not going to do any of that stuff. And the writers kept coming up with scenarios where they push him and they push him. And they're like, well, didn't you do this and didn't you do that? He goes, well, that's, you know, a gray area. I didn't kill anybody, but I got a little heated and things like that. Zack Snyder didn't do that. It was always like, he could be a bad guy. And then they constantly had him blowing up buildings and lasering, you know, satellites and stuff. And you're like, well, crap. Yeah, I can see that now. You know, there was no consistency. So when you're trying to tell me a story or a message, please be, you know, consistent and on point and know what you're trying to say.
Yeah. And I think what wasn't exploited in those films is the concept of not being able to save everybody. Like, that would have been a better theme to harp on, instead of, wouldn't people be terrified of somebody who could do this? Like, the DC movies are bad for a lot of reasons, but the primary reason that they are bad is because you're not supposed to be invested in the superheroes. You're supposed to be invested in the normal people around them. And normal people are really boring. I should know. So, like, you know, like,
I know a few.
But, like, it's true. Like, that's what they wanted to talk about, was, like, what if this was really, how would people really react? And I guess that is interesting, you know, and I always love that scene where he's standing there, like, floating, you know, and, like, not moving.
Well, I mean, it's an interesting premise, but then, you know, it's one sentence. What would you do if humans met Superman? Okay, now what would Superman do? And in the movie, it was, don't worry, I'm fine. Oh, well, that's like the opposite of an intro class or an improv class where you're supposed to say, and then, you know? So Superman Superman basically cuts it short and goes, don't worry, I'm fine. I'm from Kansas. I'm as American as apple pie. And everyone goes, well, we're going to blow you up. I'm like, wait, what? Like, it stopped making sense at that point. So
yeah. And they omitted the, you know, the character having anything to think about or do, you know, it was, you know, except for, like, should I, you know, expose myself and should I, like, well, yes, of course you should. Like,
right. And then it was like, well, how do I prove it to them? And he ran around saving everybody. And people were still like, well, what if he doesn't save us? I'm like, but he did. What is the problem here?
Yeah, like, I remember the guy who, like, gets his leg crushed, and, like, the guy that they use him to blow up the Capitol building and the other one. Yeah. And I'm like, he's griping about it? Really? I mean,
you're alive, ain't you? Yeah.
I mean, that was handled way better in, like, The Incredibles,
Right.
When the guy tries to commit suicide, which, by the way, we should point out how dark that was for a Pixar Disney movie. Guy didn't want to get sick because he wanted to die. I mean, that happened real quick in the beginning of that movie.
Yeah, he never asked to be saved. It's like, whoa, man. I brought my kids to this.
Jeez. So that's funny. And it's also the premise for, you know, the beginning premise for a lot of other more interesting storylines that aren't necessarily juvenile, but were just, you know, told through a comic book movie. But like, if you pair that whole man afraid of Superman thing with Superman trying to, you know, the reason he was hiding and didn't try to save people was because he knew he couldn't save everybody. So let's say he has like a traumatic experience as a child. Like the whole thing, like the take the premise of Superman 1, where, you know, he has to, you know, stop both bombs from going off at the same time, and Lex Luthor knows he can't do it. So Lois Lane dies and he freaks out, and that's the whole thing where he spins the planet backwards. Like, to have that happen when he's like 12, and then he has this fear, like, if I try to interfere with what's going on here, you know, I might be able to save this person but not that person, and then I'm gonna feel guilty about that. And like, there's a lot more interesting stuff to do with that, and it plays into that, like, you know, mortal men's fear of this guy to saying, like, why did he save this person and not that person? It becomes way more complex.
Why stop a bank robbery when you could save an airplane from falling out of the sky?
Yeah,
like, what are you doing, pal? Yeah. You know, I mean, that's something.
Yeah, so
you can't ask these questions in a vacuum, which is what ended up happening.
Right. It was just they literally wanted to make a movie where the point of view was basically that of the humans when it was convenient. And then when it was not convenient, when you needed to have punching and kicking, then you got to see his point of view and the punching and the kicking.
Yeah.
So.
But I don't think people should dismiss these movies because they're cartoons. It's harder for some. And I agree that the art style makes a big difference. Like this, I liked the style of this movie. I thought it looked good.
Yeah, you know, it did.
The characters were proportionate and they were well drawn and shaded well. There's one cartoon, was it the Teen Titans? And they're like, it's supposed to be like adult humor, but like goofy kid animation. And I can't watch it. It's just off-putting to me that they look so stupid. And I thought it was just me. And I saw like a thing on Facebook where someone else was like, I wish they didn't draw these things so dumb. They look like third graders, you know, dropped the glitter thing all over their glue project and the glitter got stuck to the page. And they're like, I guess I'll just go with it, you know. You know, so that can make a difference. But just because it's a cartoon doesn't mean you can't tell really interesting stories.
No, and it's certainly not a Pixar movie. Like, there's definitely a difference in quality. But, you know, they are exploring things with these characters that are, you know, that are worth looking at. And oftentimes, like, I remember watching a thing relatively recently with it was an old interview with Howard Ashman, the guy that wrote The Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast and Aladdin. And what he was saying basically was that, like, you know, Disney's done something really great by hiring me, in that they wanted to make some successful films, so we just decided to make a bunch of Broadway musicals as cartoons. And, you know, one thing he said, and this was like 25 years ago, and it, you know, it stands out now after I've seen so many terrible movie musicals, is that, like, the cartoon lends itself to the musical so much better than live-action films do. And, like, it's one of the reasons that all these recent Disney remakes of their own movies have been so terrible, is because they're meant to look either so photorealistic as to be creepy, like The Lion King, or they're just shot with people, you know, like Beauty and the Beast. Because you need, like, a disconnect between the the medium and the story sometimes, or rather like from the medium and the audience to really get into the story. And I think superhero movies like, you know, the ones we're used to now, these $400 million epics, it kind of spoiled us a little bit. And like, if we can make the cartoons look real, why don't we just do that? And I think that, you know, that's does a disservice to these stories which are being told, which are, you know, they're not, the dialogue is written kind of crappy. Like, it's really simple. It's something about it is still very basic, but like the stories themselves are so good and so strong that they kind of hold up a little bit.
Sure. Well, I always look at Into the Spider-Verse, which is really one of the best cartoon superhero things ever.
Unquestionably, yeah.
You know, and like, that's a story that I think works the best as a cartoon. I mean, I can't fathom how they would have ever done that as a live action movie, which is okay.
Oh, it never would have. No. It's so ridiculous, and it, you know, it's so self-referential, and it draws upon so many tropes and things. Yeah,
yeah. Like even when they did like the Deadpool thing with like his mask moving with on Ryan Reynolds' face, that was about as big a stretch as you can make. Like that's a comic book thing that doesn't happen in real life. Any more than that, and your brain just wouldn't process it. So like, when you watch the Spider-Verse, it's not something you question at all, that their masks move up and down and like, you know, there's squiggle lines when they get punched and stuff. You know, your brain is more accepting of that. So, yeah. But you're still telling such a great story.
Yeah, same thing with just, you know, going from talking to singing to dancing. Like, that generally, like, in a theater, when the person's right in front of you, your brain automatically says, okay, this is a play. I have to enjoy this. It's not meant to be so, which to me is hilarious if you think about it. Like, the person is, you know, in some cases just in arm's length from you, but you're willing to accept that they're a cat and they're and that they're singing about this or that or whatever. But like, you do the same thing in a movie and it's terrifying.
I know. Yeah. Like, wow, that cat can really boogie. And then you watch like the Lion King remake, you're like, oh God, what Satan spawn is this? You know?
Yeah, I think that one above all really bothers me the most. And there's this really great YouTube channel called Sideways where this guy who's a complete music nerd talks about why all the Disney movies, like the remakes, are terrible from like a music point of view.
Oh, they're all terrible. I don't understand the adulation that the Jungle Book gets.
Oh yeah, that wasn't very good. That was
wasn't good at all.
That was probably the best of them, but that's saying not very much. It still wasn't very good.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
But like, I mean, this guy, in the Sideways channel pointed out, like, you know, how basically they took Emma Watson and flattened her voice out and ran it through the big NASA machine that they did in The Simpsons to make the boy band.
NASA. Just all the dials right up, you know.
And all of a sudden they become in sync. But like the Lion King, people kept joking about it, like, oh, the live action Lion King. I'm like, what are you talking about? It's just a different kind of cartoon.
What's live about it?
I mean, like,
it's a terrible strain on the animator's wrists.
You know, like, they didn't film a lion doing anything. You know? Oh, look, it's a sunset. Okay, the sunset is real. But even then, they probably gussied that up, you know? Like,
oh, no, the whole thing was digital. There was nothing. I mean,
really? Whoa. Not even the sets? They couldn't even go to the savannah and take a picture?
Everything was digital, even the water. Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah, it's just, you know, everyone's just showing off. Look what we can do. Okay, but who cares?
Yeah, I wish there was some sort of way you would know which one of these things were good. So Superman Red Sun, it was okay. It was my final verdict, you know. It was okay. I enjoyed it more than some other things I've seen. But I was texting you this today because I downloaded this on a lark. I saw it on like Cartoon Network, and I was like, "Oh, that's a thing! Batman and the Ninja Turtles." is another one of these movies. And I was like, that's got to be the dumbest thing I've ever seen. It was so much better than this. It was funny. It was action-packed. The plot made sense. I was enthralled. It was really good. And I was like, what a dumb concept. But, you know, being told it's a cartoon made it work. You know, it would not have worked as a live-action thing. It had action that was meaningful. It had jokes. I thought it was great. But you wouldn't know it because it's under the same, you know, Warner Brothers logo. So
it just goes to show you nobody knows anything.
Nobody knows anything. That's why you have us to help you out.
Yep, that's why we're here. Also, we have nothing else to do. So,
yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're all stuck at home. So.
All right, anything else about this?
Yeah, that's it.
All right. Well, if you have any thoughts about Superman Red Son, you can tweet us at @3drinksinpod. Same thing on Instagram. Make sure that you go to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or iHeartRadio and subscribe. Tell your friends. Leave reviews. You can like the Facebook page, and you can email us at 3drinksinpodcast@gmail.com. I think that's everything.
Yeah, that's it.
All right. As always, please drink responsibly, wash your hands, maintain that social distance, and we'll talk to you all next time.
Yep. Take care.
Bye.